Hey, Mustard on the beat, ho, Debo, any rap nigga, he a freak, though. Man down, call like Amber Lambs, tell him free, bro. Nella nigga to the cross, he walk around like Tizo. What's up with these?
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off this week, so I've been sitting behind the microphone today, and I'll be here tomorrow and the next day. Today I'm joined and thrilled to be joined again in studio by Angela Lang. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing in Communities here in Milwaukee. Also joined by Brian Kelly, Fancy Brian, as he's known around here in the booth, and he does it all for the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm hoping you'll join our conversation here at 855-752-4842. Tell us who you think Kamala Harris should choose for her vice presidential candidate. But before we get to that, I wanted to follow through with my little tease. And the tease was who President Biden should give the Medal of Freedom to. And I was prompted to this thought by Jack from Merrimack, who rightly said the Republican Party is no longer the Republican Party. It's the MAGA Party, which led me to this thought, that it would be both honorable and advantageous for President Biden to give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and even Mike Pence for upholding our democracy at a time when it was hanging by a thread. I mean, I don't agree with any of those two. I especially can't stand Cheney and Pence, but they did do the right thing, the really important thing, the courageous thing, when they were under a lot of pressure not to do that. And I think if Biden were to do this, bring him to the White House, put that medal around their neck, that would show a decent swath of Republicans and independents that this is the choice. You can be with everyone from Liz Cheney to Bernie Sanders and AOC, or you can be with the other folks who don't believe in democracy.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I never thought about that. I mean, when I'm thinking about who should get an award, it's never those people.
It's not a real cocktail party conversation opener, but Zoom opener.
I would never proactively say that. I will say, though, while, yes, I agree on one hand that they do deserve that credit and acknowledgement, I wish the bar wasn't so low, right? Like, what they did should have been what everybody did. Like, I'm kind of sad we have to give them a gold star for doing the right thing. The bar is underground, apparently, at this point, you know? But, like, I hear you and I agree with you, and I think it would send a message. I think it would be incredibly strategic in a lot of different ways. But I also think, you know, for the more rational folks, it could be a show of unity on his kind of like one of his final acts on the way out of office of like he tried to bring the country together. I think there's like an Olivia Pope scandal way of spinning what that is. You know, there is a messaging spin there of what that means and ending on a high note.
And it fits his rhetoric for
a
long time.
It does. It fits his brand. It fits his rhetoric. But again, I just wish we weren't living in a world where doing the right thing and speaking up for democracy, going against your own party, wasn't given a badge of honor or a gold medal, quite literally.
Yeah. Solid point.
That's just the country we live in, unfortunately.
But the bar is low.
I just have to mention that since you brought up Olivia Pope, I think it's amazing that Scandal was like, well, we don't have a show anymore now that Trump's in office, so bye.
And Veep as well. Like, my two favorite shows, they're my comfort shows. I think anyone that knows me understands or already knows these things. But, like, there's been so many, like, Veep scenes and references on Twitter the last couple days and just, like, the last couple weeks. And, like, those shows are brilliant for various reasons. But I also think, yeah, like, they ran out of content and material because it started imitating life so closely that they were like, all right, we got to quit while we're ahead, guys.
Yeah.
Great shows.
You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
Speaking of Veep, Pete Buttigieg is in the running. I think the two most daring candidates would be Whitmer of Michigan or Buttigieg. And Pete was on Jon Stewart last night, and he was brilliant as always. That man's got talent. And Brian's got a little clip that I think we should listen to.
So what is this economic populism based on?
Well, it's not based on policy. It's just body language. It's this idea that if you just act like you are populist, that counts. As if, look, I'm under no illusions that elections are just a policy exercise. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is vibes. A lot of it is style. But if your party has been systematically against unions, against a higher minimum wage, against things like paid family leave, against overtime, then just because you found Hulk Hogan and Kid Rock and put him on stage doesn't make you a friend of the working man, right? Like, the substance actually matters.
Against overtime, I just love that.
That's so good.
Hulk Hogan and Kid Rock. He is, I think he's the most talented in the running.
Yeah.
I think he would help a lot with any media performance, any debate performance, any public speaking. But, you know, everyone says, oh, is the country ready for a gay vice president? Who knows? I mean, they were saying the same thing about Obama. The country wasn't ready for a black president.
Right.
Guess what?
You're not ready until you are, and you break that glass ceiling. You know, what I think is interesting, you know, I'm in all the nerdy group chats. Shout out to one in particular. And we were talking about some of the stuff, and I had to like tune out because I was like, I'm not this much of a nerd, guys. But a good friend of mine was like, yeah, I like Pete, but like, why would you get rid of one of the most talented like surrogates? Like, he is able to be the transportation secretary and do these things and not make his job boring. I think a lot of cabinet positions to the American people are boring, or we don't know what they do.
Especially transportation.
Yeah, right? And I'm like, I'm actually paying attention now in ways that like I wouldn't, because I'm like, oh, I know this guy. Like, I'm familiar with him. He's out and he's able to go on kind of the media trail in a very talented way. And so I think there's an idea that some of us politicals are like, no, we need him to keep, you know, kind of making the rounds. But, you know, I think it's interesting when people are like, are we ready for this or are we ready for that? Well, we never were until we did the thing.
And it's the same thing with Whitmer. I mean, I've been surprised by how many white women in my circle say the country's not ready for two women. I mean, one woman would be enough, two women's too much, or just the American people can't take it. I mean, who knows?
We don't need to negotiate again. That's the thing that Democrats do so much, is that they negotiate against themselves. And it's just like, yeah, the idea of two women at the top of the ticket sounds very drastic. And part of me is like, ooh, would they, quote unquote, vote for that? But that doesn't mean we don't try. That doesn't mean we don't push. And we don't need to always negotiate against ourselves, because that's how we box ourselves into corner. That's how we box ourselves into policy. And then we're never able to think bigger about different policies and different models and the different styles of things, because we're always negotiating what we think is going to happen when it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I've heard Earl Ingram on the Civic Media Radio Network talk about how neat it would be to have Whitmer, to have two women running, to really turn the page, really move this country forward.
Yeah. And a lot of people like her, too.
She can provide Michigan.
Yes, she can. And I got to tell you, the only people that have told me flat out, just flat out, and this is from the Democratic and Republican side both, the only people that have ever told me that Kamala just can't win flat out, white dudes.
I was going to say white men, aren't they?
Those are the only people.
Dun, dun, dun. Shocker.
Yeah. And we got our old friend CJ on the line, and I'm happy to take CJ's call at least for a while. Hear him out. CJ, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call, Matt.
I thought we were going to have lunch again. I appreciate it. You didn't get back to me yet on having lunch again.
No, I'm looking forward to it, Matt, and I'll definitely get in contact with you. Maybe within the next week or so would be awesome.
Okay, let's make it happen. But what's on your mind? I'm sorry.
Well, no, I had a great time, and I look forward to it again. I think if we were running the show, there'd be a lot of problems solved. But as I listen to you talk about the VP candidate, potential VP candidates, I don't want you to forget that Kamala was a VP and she was part of the administration, and she also now not so much called the border czar anymore, which just blows America away. What a joke. Her positions are carrying on the policies of Joe Biden and almost times two. So when you look at her record, it's going to be kind of like our former Senate candidate, Democrat. When they found out his record, they didn't want it. They don't want it. And it should be more about her record and what policies she stands for, because this will be the most extreme radical left candidate ever. And I could give you many reasons why I say that, because of her agenda. not to mention open border, against Title IX. I can go on and on.
Okay. All right, CJ, I got the gist of it. I do wish you'd pronounce her name correctly. Kamala. Comma, like period, semicolon, colon, punctuation mark, comma.
Kamala. I will also say, as an organizer who some have called the most extreme and radical person, Kamala Harris is not indeed the most extreme radical leftist candidate, because trust me, as lefties, we have issues with some of her records, right? And so it's so interesting that the right is so scared that they're like, this is the most lefty candidate we've ever seen. Really? Because lefties aren't saying that.
Did they never see George McGovern?
Like, that's not. So it's just, it's interesting because I don't think that that's true. And
I don't know who Bernie Sanders is.
And it's interesting, too, that like people are saying, oh, she's going to carry, you know, the same policies of Biden, if not worse. I'm sorry. Has she written all of her position papers and has her platform completely full and out and developed? Has the debate happened that talked about some of these things? I think all of those things are still be to determined. And I think she is going to have a certain pressure of like getting out of Biden's shadow. And so what does that look like? And no offense to her, but like it's just a position. The vice president oftentimes doesn't do a lot of policy making and things like that. So when people are like, go to her record, it's like, at least can we point to the right record that we're talking about? Because people are talking about her record as vice president. And I'm like, she smiled and went to ribbon cuttings because that's the role of a vice president. But if people actually want to critique, there's other things, but Republicans are choosing not to do that.
And she did stick her neck out and call for a ceasefire before yep. Biden was calling for a ceasefire.
Yep.
I think that took a lot of courage. It showed me, anyway, that she was in tune with the suffering of the Palestinian people. And just like me and my wife watching on TV, we cannot sit there and watch that horror without at least speaking up. And she said essentially the same thing. And to me, that struck an important chord. It didn't mean that, you know, necessarily she's going to have a much better policy, but it suggests she might.
Right.
And, you know, she gets to be president of the United States. She gets to do things her way.
Exactly.
And you're right. I mean, her hands are tied as vice president. She did get a terrible assignment to be, you
sure.
know, solve the immigration
yes.
crisis. I mean, you couldn't solve the immigration crisis. And then the Democrats tried to solve it and the Republicans wouldn't go along because Trump said, I need this
yeah, that
in
whole
my
debacle.
Campaign.
That whole process.
So I'm hoping to talk about this further with you, Angela Lang, in the next couple minutes about who should be vice president
yeah.
under Kamala Harris. And I hope you, the listener, will join the conversation at 855-752-4842, 752-4842. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. This
well,
is the Maggie Dawn Show.
Written by the winner, so it largely depends on
Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's out this week. I'll be here the rest of the show, and I'll be here tomorrow and Thursday. I'm joined by Angela Lang of Block this afternoon, which is always fun, and by Brian Kelly in the booth as per usual. We had a text from Lynn from Econimowoc, Angela, that I wanted to read to you. She writes, good afternoon. My daughter will probably vote for VP Harris. My daughter's contention is that she prosecuted people who broke marijuana laws. This is ironic as my daughter's stepfather was a Milwaukee police officer and after retirement worked for the Milwaukee DA. Can you help me square this circle?
I think that this is an incredibly important point and thank you so much for sharing. I will say that this is the main hangup. I mean, I know we've been talking about how excited folks are, but this is the main hangup in our community, is especially when we're talking to Black voters in Milwaukee, some of which reside in the most incarcerated zip code 53206. And through our organizing efforts over the last several years, people remember things like the 94 crime bill, of which Joe Biden wrote when he was in the Senate. People remember Kamala Harris's prosecutorial record, specifically about some of the truancy policies and locking up parents if kids weren't in schools. And so there's some real... I think on one hand, there are some folks that are sweeping it under the rug, which I don't think should happen. I think, and I've said this multiple times, and even on the show last week, is that this is a time where multiple things can be true. people can be excited, but people can also, this is where critical thinking comes involved. And that's why I really appreciate this comment, because you don't hear a lot of people talking about the criticisms right now. And I will say that, myself included, those were where my thoughts went immediately after I heard it. And I was like, oh, exciting, history making. Ooh, she's got to really square some stuff away with her record. And I think it's important for us to take a beat and to sit in that, especially as organizers that know folks have been directly impacted, have been organizing around these issues. We can't suddenly forget them because it's politically convenient for us. But I think also at the same time, we can also acknowledge the reality that we're kind of staring at the bottom of the barrel at this point when it comes to if there's going to be a democracy. Like, we are looking former President Trump square in the face of if we should even have a country to continue. And so I think, you know, we can understand, you know, different purity tests and whatnot. But what the way that we're talking about it at Block is that, you know, we can be excited. We can be glad that the community is excited. And we are also excited to see how she evolves and grows on the issues, implying that there is an opportunity for her to say, hey, listen, it's been quite a few years since I've been in that role. I've learned a lot. The world has changed. This is my stance now. I think there is an opportunity, and I said this about Joe Biden with the 94 crime bill. It was an opportunity to say, hey, years ago I was wrong, and this is where I stand now. And I think that takes a lot of strength. But I also think it would earn a lot of respect. And so, you know, being able to square that away, I will say, I hear you. I'm with you with that comment. And I think a lot of folks, lefty folks, are squaring away a couple things. And I think also at the same time, people are waiting until ballots will start to come out in October. You know, so much could happen between now and October. And so I think, you know, paying close attention, but then also understanding that there may not be a democracy left after November, which is scary.
Yeah, I'd like to hear, and thanks for the text, Lynn from Econimwalk. And if you want to join the conversation, 855-752-4842, or send us a text. You know, I'm waiting to hear from Kamala Harris about, you know, what she would do about legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
Or what she would do about the people who were incarcerated solely on marijuana possession. Because there's a lot.
I do have a clip of her talking about marijuana.
There we go.
This is from back when she was running for president against Joe Biden, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which I think first of all, let me just make the statement very clear. I believe we need to legalize marijuana.
That's pretty much
okay.
It.
That's why they call him Fancy Brian. He can pick those things up.
I was waiting for more, and I was like, oh, okay.
Years ago. That's good enough for me. I hope she reiterates it. First of all, it's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do, and I would go further, right? Because when we talk about legalizing marijuana, what you have to do is you need to just not only legalize it, you need to expunge people's records and get people out of jail that are currently serving sentences for possession or whatever it is. And then you also need to remove barriers for previously incarcerated folks that have been incarcerated for that issue in particular, because a lot of times when dispensaries start to open, you don't see a lot of Black and brown owned dispensaries, yet we know our cousins are locked up, but we see white people making a profit. And shocker, they may have had their, you know, they may be back home, they may have had their record expunged, but they can't even engage in that business because they have a record. And so you're still seeing this profit kind of being disproportionate. And so I think when we are having a conversation of legalizing marijuana, it's got to go further. It's got to be a holistic approach. And I'm curious, again, if that is something that she would reinforce and be interested in.
Yeah, I'd like to hear her out on that. And Joe Biden can do it too in his last 6 months too, if he wanted to. He could commute a lot of sentences.
Biden can do so much right now. Right. He is the most powerful, I would argue, he will ever be.
And the most free.
The most free, which I think makes you the most powerful. You literally can go out doing whatever. Those bold stances that you are like, oh, I can't piss off this person, or I got to work with this person in 2 or 3 years. Do it now. You want to legalize marijuana? Just do it. You know, I think I'm very curious to see if he will lean in the same way as the second half of a second term president. They always kind of get a little bit more bold because they have nothing to lose. As Obama said, I have no more elections to run. I should know I won both of them, right? Like, he's able to kind of do stuff. And so I'm curious to see if Joe Biden will take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Unleash
Dark Brandon, yes.
And of course, with the U.S. Supreme Court decision, he can do absolutely anything he wants. That's the scary part for anyone in that office.
My gosh.
Crazy time. Hey, we haven't talked about Vel Phillips yet, and I see you've got a vote for attorney Vel Phillips shirt on. And tell us about Vel Phillips and the event that happened on Saturday.
Yeah, so Vel Phillips, for folks that don't know, high-profile first elected black woman in the state of Wisconsin. One of the interesting things that I always find just fascinating is that when she was elected to the Common Council in Milwaukee, she was the first black woman, but she was the first woman, and that they didn't even have women's restrooms in City Hall at that point because it was just, why would they? And she has broken barriers. She worked on housing marches. And on Saturday, officially, there was an unveiling of a Vel Phillips statue in Madison on the square at the Capitol. And so to have this woman, I believe she's the first black woman ever to have a statue, I think, or there was some
statistic. Any state capitol.
Which
is crazy. Any state capitol in this country.
But it's also very cool to know that, like, Wisconsin yet again did, like, the right thing, and that, like, here we are paying homage to Vel Phillips, who was an attorney and just, like, just a badass organizer.
Yeah. Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. Yeah, that was, yes, that was very pivotal. But so it was great, and I can't wait to go to Madison next and take pictures and visit and just show my respects to it.
Yeah, the sculpture looks great. You can see it at Madison.com. Yeah. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Call us, 855-752-4842. I'm Matt Rothschild, and I'm here with Angela Lang and Brian Kelly.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
Well, there's a throwback. Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's on vacation this week. I've been happy to get this assignment behind the mic today, and I'll actually be with you tomorrow and Thursday. It's been a thrill to have Angela Lang, Executive Director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, right here in the studio with me again today. We always have fun.
It was a great time.
And Brian Kelly, the genius behind so much that happens over at the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin.
And the good music.
Yeah, great music. So we had that text from Lynn from Oconomowoc, and she texts back, Angela, that she really appreciated your answer. She absolutely agrees. Legalize, expunge, and support local owners and growers.
Yes, 1,000%.
And we've got a couple of callers, too. Annie held onto the line, and thank you for your patience, Annie. What do you got to say?
I do not want this to veer away from Kamala Harris as a prosecutor, but I cannot help but be reminded of the issue of attacking Biden's view and votes on busing, because I remember aging myself here on busing. It was a debate subject in high school. There were both sides, and there were color, whatever. There were blacks and whites on both sides. You know, it was a very complicated thing and whatever. And it seems to be looked at in a way different than it really was. But looking at Kamala Harris, I think, boy, there were prosecutors who, well, what was she supposed to do? To say, I'm not going to enforce the law, and then she would have never had a job going further, or, you know, make, I mean, her job was prosecuting, where it's a legislator's job to make the laws and blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really hard to blame her for doing her job. And how many people were in her job that said, oh, I'm not going to prosecute somebody, and, you know, they're practicing law on some small street down in San Francisco now.
Annie from Watertown, appreciate the call. Of course, prosecutors have discretion always, though.
Yes. I mean, I think what's interesting is that I think there's ways that folks can be creative to avoid locking people up. And I'm going to give a good shout out to my friend, Judge Everett Mitchell. Granted, he's a judge, but a judge out of Dane County. A judge literally sentences, and he's in juvenile court, or he was, I don't know if he's moved. But one of the first things, he was like, take the handcuffs off these kids, and wherever possible, he is able to try and find a different direction to avoid criminalization. And so I think there are ways, and there's even testimonies, right? The DA over in Philly, Larry Krasner, he has been touted as like an example of ways to avoid more criminal justice and more locking up Black and brown people. And if we're going to talk about mass incarceration as our issue, we need to also understand when we're perpetuating it, even on our side as well.
Yeah, and I just saw an article, and I think in the Journal Sentinel over the last 2 days, that the state police in Wisconsin are hauling people over who went down to Rockford or anywhere in Illinois to pick up marijuana, and they're disproportionately pulling over people of color.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We have a call from Troy, and then we're going to go to Nick Ramos, who's going to join us as a guest here in a minute. But Troy from Mount Horeb, what's on your mind?
You know, pretty much any time they do any of those things, they disproportionately get people of color.
Yes.
So, you know, that's pretty awful. I missed what you said, Angela, about the Val Phillips statue. Did you say this is the first Capitol that's got...
It's the first of a Black woman, yeah, in the country.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? That's
All these statues of Confederate people.
Exactly.
And, oh, my God.
Yep, you see it.
I had to call because I couldn't believe my ears.
You heard it right. You heard it right, Troy.
And I was kind of doing something else work-wise, and I'm like, did I just hear that? So,
unfortunately, so.
I said this the last time I called. You two are absolutely right. You should have a show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh,
bless your heart, Troy. Troy from Mount Horeb. Thanks
Appreciate
so much for
you.
The call. And now we have a good friend here who's joining us. He actually took my old job at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I was ready to retire, and I've been dragged back from retirement, kicking and screaming. No, I actually enjoy doing the radio stuff. But his name is Nick Ramos. He's doing a terrific job at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Nick, thanks for joining the show.
My friend. Hey, Nick.
Hey, am I coming in loud and clear for you guys?
Yeah, you're perfect. You're perfect.
Oh, man, I'm so, so happy to be here. And it's funny because it just feels like I'm just hanging out with, I got literally Matt, who is my Obi-Wan Kenobi. I got Angela, who was literally my Princess Leia, so to speak, when I first got into the political scene, and it's all just coming together. So I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. Now, you were in Milwaukee today for a Get Out the Vote Day of Action at MATC downtown. Tell us what happened there. What did you do there?
You know, you just... That's why you guys are seeing me. Well, for you radio listeners out there, I didn't make it quite to a coffee shop in time for this. This was too important for me to miss it. And so I am sitting in a rental car right now, right outside my alma mater, Marquette Law School. But we had a fabulous day. I mean, we had over 100 people sign up and show out on a middle of work week on a Tuesday at MATC. The energy was vibrant. We had an amazing press conference. We marched to Zeidler Municipal Building. We had people honking and hooting and hollering about early voting. I can't wait to look at all the letters. I got to go to Costco and buy a ton of postage stamps. And I know that it just went up to 73 cents, which I'm super bummed about, but people are fired up about this. People want to make sure that the amendments don't get absolutely ran over us like they did in April. And I think the crowds that we saw today are a real testament to that. And so we just had a fun day of music. We had Wave Chappelle, you know, Milwaukee's own, in the building, just talking about what it meant to him from his community on the north side of what voting was. And so it was just, it was so special, guys. And I had to change my shirt 3 times today. I've been sweating profusely. Yeah. This is not thick guy weather, but you know what? This is voting season, and so I will sweat through a million shirts if it means we get everybody up and voting.
I know that's right.
Nick, you mentioned the amendments issue. Do you want to explore that a little further? There are two amendments on the back of your ballot in this August election having to do with who gets to spend federal dollars. Why? We want people to vote no on that. Do you want to explain that issue, Nick?
Yeah, just to keep it clean and concise, because I know the minute any of you, if you look on my vote, if you go on my vote online, for all you Wisconsinites, I promise you, if you look at the sample ballot, it is something that looks like hieroglyphics mixed with Sanskrit. You might not be able to understand this, and you're not wrong. Like, I'm a lawyer of 7 years, and I have hard times understanding it. So it is totally okay. But in a nutshell, I mean, our legislature on its final like gasp for air is trying to get around the governor's veto pen and try and do a lot of what it did when Governor Walker was leaving and Governor Evers was coming in during that lame duck session, try and take powers away from the executive branch, put it into the legislative branch. And it is, for anybody that has any level of common sense, this is another power grab where you get to watch a body of government try and take something that is not theirs and try and take appropriation of federal dollars and take it away from the governor. And I just want people to know that when it is emergency time, when it is crunch time, do you want to wait for 132 people to get off their butts and go do something? Or do you want to wait for one person to get off their butt and do something? When it comes to an emergency, when it comes to your tax dollars at the end of the day, do you want to hold somebody accountable that's in a different corner of state that's got constituents that they care about? Or do you want somebody that everybody had to go and elect and they are got to be held accountable by all of us? Like, it's baffling to me that we have to ask voters to come to a low turnout election in August, and a high turnout is 21% of the electorate. Yeah. 21%. That is a low bar to then ask people to change the Constitution, and it's unacceptable and it's anti-democratic. And we need people to know that if you vote yes for this, then you're basically asking the legislature, all right, you know what? You guys are great with the decisions when it comes to, you know, our money and our time. You guys can take your time, you know, gavel in, gavel out when you want. If something happens with my family, you know what? You guys have the best interest for all of us here in Milwaukee. You know, you guys are looking out for us. You don't call this a drain on the city or on the state. You don't worry about us. We're first class city, but you know, it's just, we need to keep things the same, and we should not be trying to change the Constitution and make problems. We should be trying to fix problems with it.
You know, Nick, you know, you talked about them gasping for air, and they're gasping for power too, as you're suggesting. Please. And they're trying to take it away from the governor. And, you know, this has been in the hands of the governor governor of Wisconsin for 90 years.
Yeah.
This isn't 90. Something that Tony Evers did.
Yep.
This isn't even something that Scott Walker did when he was aggrandizing power in the governor's office. This has been the law in Wisconsin for 9 decades now. It's the law in almost all the states. And now they want to take it away. The gerrymandered legislature under Robin Voss, fearing that they're not going to have a majority anymore or a workable majority, are trying to get everything they can. And they're clever, crafty people. I give them credit for that. Yeah. They're able to write a constitutional amendment that sounds sensible if you don't know anything about it or where they're coming from.
We were talking about this in the office today, and literally one of the ambassadors was like, so how are they just allowed to change the Constitution to do this? And we were like, well, this is the process. This is how it is. And I literally said something very similar. And I'm like, they start to do this. Pay attention to when the walls are closing in on Republicans, because they start to do this. And we saw it when Governor Evers was elected during that like extraordinary session or lame duck session where they try to limit his powers, right? Like, that this is a playbook of what they do. When they feel the walls closing in, they throw stuff at the walls to see what it sticks, to make sure that they can hold on to whatever grasp of power. And this is just another power play for them.
And they saw them losing power a couple years ago. So the way they amended the Constitution is with the gerrymandered legislature in Republican hands for 2 consecutive sessions. They rammed through this wording after their lawyers and their comms people figured out the most clever way to present it, and then they put it on the ballot.
Yep.
And this is the only time that Wisconsinites get to have their say in a plebiscite is after two sessions of a legislature passes a constitutional
amendment. A gerrymandered legislature.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to get it through because the maps are going to give us a fairer result. But that's how they have rigged these constitutional amendments in such a way as to make it real difficult for the layperson in reading this ballot to figure out what to do. So, Nick, what are you doing over the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and with your allied organizations to clear this up for folks?
Well, just one fun fact for people at home. If anybody's keeping score, I want you to go home and think about this, and this is your reason why you need to get up and tell people to go vote for this. Here is something that you should think about, and this is why it's so absurd. Ohio, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, all of those states combined, in the last 2 years, we have seen more constitutional amendments than all of those states combined. 2023, 2024, Wisconsin, we are leading both of the, we're leading all of those states. And as you guys have correctly said, that we have folks, they're not stupid. They are very crafty, surgical, thoughtful, and they are looking at the ways that they can try and cement bad public policy into our constitution so that we can, so we cannot get out of it. So like, we need to realize this binding referendum, it is binding. Yeah. So we got to get up and go vote. And so for us, this GOTV Day of Action is but one step. There are a variety of organizations that are doing all types of letter writing, canvassing, text banks. We are going to be doing a ton of mail and phones and texting across the state of Wisconsin. And I mean, I'm just going to be getting out and trying to speak to as many people as I can until the buzzers hit zero. Because
I appreciate that, Nick. That's what we count on you for.
Shout
you're doing a great job at it. Nick Ramos, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Thanks
so
much.
Seriously, shout out to y'all. Be safe, man.
Appreciate you.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. Maggie's on vacation this week. I'll be here again tomorrow and on Thursday. It's been great fun having Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, here with me. And it's always great to have Brian Kelly in the studio. And thanks to Nick Ramos, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, for joining us, too. In the last segment that we have, about 8 minutes, 7 minutes, I couldn't be on today without talking about Donald Trump's outrageous comment to a group of Christians over the weekend, saying that, you know, if they vote for him, maybe they don't have to vote anymore. And Brian's got some audio for us.
We have to win this election, most important election ever. We want a landslide that's too big to rig. If you want to save America, get your friends, get your family, get everyone you know, and vote. Vote early. Vote absentee, vote on election day. I don't care how, but you have to get out and vote. And again, Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. 4 more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
We'll have it fixed so good you won't have to vote.
I mean, there's
what
so much in there.
What does that mean?
So much in there. How do
we know?
Hard to unpack. My beautiful Christians, for one, it was like my beautiful generals. It's just like he owns people and he's dividing people. Of course,
I couldn't write kind of, fast enough.
Also amazing. He's now for voting early and for absentee.
Also, yeah,
absentee voting.
Absentee? No. What? Okay. Hard turn on that.
Yeah, I thought he just wanted same day voting and paper ballots. But the horrifying thing. I mean, we laugh, but the horrifying thing is that this is an echo of dictator on day one.
Yeah.
This is an echo of when he said, and few people have picked up on this lately, President Xi, he's president for life.
Yeah.
Isn't that a neat thing? Wouldn't that be great to have here? That's what he said when he was president of the United States.
And I would say, too, that this is less about partisanship, but like if anybody were to say that, no matter what they identified with, if they were independent, Democrat, Republican, Green Party, whatever, if anybody were to make those comments, everyone should be concerned by those comments. So I just want to like point that out. I think there's reasons that other parties don't say those things, but yeah.
And he, you know, he went on Laura Ingraham either this morning or last night and was offered, Laura Ingraham repeatedly offered him an opportunity to walk those comments back.
He didn't misspeak. He said what he said and he doubled down.
He said that Christians don't ever vote and that their Catholics are persecuted all the time here.
I mean, he was, you know, he never walks back his outrageous comments. He always doubles down on them, yes.
Yeah.
And when you're doubling down on saying we're not going to need elections,
yeah,
that gets really horrifying for those of us who believe in democracy. And I know everyone listening to this program believes in democracy. I know CJ believes in democracy.
Yep. CJ does.
CJ was horrified by January 6th, as the rest of us were. And here we have a guy who's running for president, telling people that they'll never have to vote again.
Nick, what does this mean for democracy?
I feel like you need to put the Imperial March music back on, no lie. You know, because as you... you weren't kidding. you know, it's... At first in 2016, when Trump hit the scene and everybody thought it was a joke and thought it was funny and thought that this guy was, oh, you know, the guy that runs The Apprentice, Trump Steaks, Trump University, you know, it's all just like a meme and it's funny. It's not funny anymore. Yeah. And I think at this point, especially carrying the torch that I carry with the democracy campaign here, hearing those words, it's not even a dog whistle to me. Like right. those are fighting words. And you're telling me then you're basically going to remove elections and remove the very fundamental aspects to our democracy and our republic that, I don't know, George Washington, the founding fathers, this whole entire country, what it's built on, the so-called patriots that you are preaching to and, you know, inspiring and ginning up your base. It's like, what is this all for then? If you're going to then threaten the entire livelihood of our democracy. And so it needs to be treated as seriously as a heart attack. And if people think that this is a joke and think that, well, you know, we have a candidate out there that is just playing and joking, take people at their word. Take, you know, our former president at his word, because as you said, Angela, he's been given opportunities to walk these comments back. He has chosen not to. And so at this point, are we a land of the free and the brave, or are we going to be one that is going to be of kings and queens and dictators? And the last time I checked, this is the United States of America, and we are allowed to vote in this country for our representatives. And it's supposed to be one person, one vote, and like those votes, hopefully means something at the end of the day, and we're working to make sure everybody has a voice. But it's terrifying to hear somebody that is one beat away and one election away from the Oval Office and the most powerful position in the entire country and the entire world threatening a dictatorship over us. And so we're going to definitely treat this seriously and make sure that people in Wisconsin are educated about this.
Nick. That's Nick Ramos from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Thanks so much for being on the Maggie Dawn Show, Nick. Angela Lang, thanks so much for riding with me again today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a lot of fun. I want to thank Brian Kelly, who's always tremendous in the booth. I want to thank Maggie Dawn for allowing me to be behind the mic today, and I'll be joining you again tomorrow and Thursday on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Devils are next. Hey.
He says, you're not going to be a dictator, are you? I said, no, 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 other than day one.
The Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire.